Welcome back to Draft Chat. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Josh.
And we're here to talk episode 5 of Draft Chat. This time it's going to be centered around the number 3 and number 17 overall picks, specifically with the Houston Rockets. Josh, let me go ahead and get started here. I'll introduce our first guest, or our guest for this episode, Mr. James Piercy, from staff writer for Dream Shake SB Nation, as well as co-host of the Above the Break podcast. James, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm always excited to talk about the Rockets. You know, let's go.
Awesome. First order of business, as always, at the very beginning and the very end, people introduce yourselves, tell us where people can find you, anything about you that we need to know before we just go straight downhill as quickly as possible running through the Rockets here.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a staff writer for the Dream Shake, which is SB Nation's Rockets page. That's where I do my passion projects, you know, because I get a lot of leeway over there, and I love writing for them. I'm also, right now, I'm writing for NBAAnalysis.net, cooking up fake trades all day, every day, you know, just hypotheticals that you can think about if you want. I co-host a podcast called Above the Break with Nevin Brown. He's a site expert at Space City Scoop, so that's we got the Rockets connection. That's Fansided Rockets page. And I am I'm associated with a group called HTX Chop Shop, which is just a group of dudes on Twitter that talk about the Rockets. There's like 10 of us, and we just do different combinations in podcasts every week. So yeah, keeping busy with semi-professional basketball journalism.
Josh, sounds like he's a chugging machine, like we're trying to be right, especially this time of year. So
yeah, that's why we're just here. You're cooking up everything. James, I'm curious. I'd like to know, how long have you been a Rockets fan? When did you, and why did you become a Rockets fan? So how has that been like?
I love this question. So I'm from St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada, right? So okay. Not, which is where I am currently, and not really a place, like not a hotbed for Rockets fans, to say the least. I think it started when I was a kid. Charles Barkley, when I was like 8 years old, had an ad, a right guard ad, if you guys might remember that. I don't know what the age range is here, but the anything less would be uncivilized. For some reason, I just found him really funny, and he became my favorite player. And he was on the Phoenix Suns at the time, so I guess I was like a Phoenix Suns fan from 8 to 9, and then he got traded to the Rockets, and I've just been with the Rockets ever since. You know, it's far too late for me to go back now, so that's my team, right?
A couple of championships in there. It's kind of hard to we are a little young to remember that commercial necessarily, but we do know the glorious Sir Charles, of course. He's a great way to, that's a really cool way to connect fandom there. Josh knows that's one of my weaknesses is like fandom stories, so I really enjoy that. Without further ado, Josh, let's go. We've talked about last week with Grayson, we did the second overall pick with the Thunder and their conglomerate of picks. So we'll stick here now, one more pick later to the third. The Rockets also have the 17th via the Brooklyn, one of the Brooklyn picks in that trade. But first of all, I just want to open it up. Potential prospects in the third overall range that you think are, you know, who you think they're going to do, maybe who you want. Just a couple of answers centered around the third overall pick. We'll start with the third and we'll go to the 17th after that.
If in my dream scenario, I probably would have landed Chet Holmgren. To me, I think he's got the highest upside of the major three. You know, I'm always attracted to players that like can be a defensive anchor and also be a second or third offensive option. I just think that's like a really nice package to get in one guy. You know, I don't think it's likely to happen. I figure, you know, if the Magic don't take him, the Thunder will is my read of the situation. So my next choice would be Paolo Banchero, who I do think we're going to probably end up drafting if I had to guess, right? I'll be totally happy with Jabari Smith Jr. as well. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think it's a little hard for me to envision the ceiling. Like he's not really a shot creator outside of 3-point range. You know, the 2-point percentage in college is a little bit concerning to me. I guess that's kind of just the common criticism of him. But like, I don't see him as being necessarily an offensive engine or like a focal point. I do think he's going to be probably one of the better 3-and-D wings in the league. And then, you know, like, maybe that's a little bit reductionist. Like, he'll be more than that, you know? He's going to be a good player. But, like, as far as that star upside, I like Banchero. Part of me thinks that some of us, including myself at times, are overthinking Banchero a little bit, you know? We're looking at a dude that's, like, 6'10", 250. He's got a guard's handle. He's got great passing vision. He's a shot creator. It's like, maybe he's just an obvious star. It kind of reminds me of Luka and LaMelo where there was like this kind of really obvious star player, but we overthought it a little bit, maybe because it's like the 3-and-D era and those aren't strengths for those guys, and so they get a little bit depreciated as prospects, you know? I don't know. Either way, I think it's going to be Paolo Banchero, and I'm going to be totally happy with Paolo Banchero. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think we both kind of think that it's most likely going to be Paolo. We've very much centered on there's a clear kind of top three that you kind of talked through there in the draft, being Holmgren, Smith, and Banchero. We're kind of in the same boat. I think anyone would love to get Chet Holmgren. And the fact that it seems like Orlando's not going to pick him, at least based on rumors right now, is kind of ridiculous. But, I think it's definitely looking like Paolo. And of the three right now, Paolo definitely, I would say, agreeing with you, looks like probably the most polished at creating his own offense. He showed that a lot in the NCAA tournament with Duke and his ability to create open shots for himself at all three levels, not just in one spot. It's definitely an area where he holds kind of a head above Holmgren and Smith, although Holmgren and Smith, I believe, are kind of being valued a bit more for their increased athleticism, their length and defensive ability that Banchero may not match up with necessarily.
So I'm not going to, look, you guys basically said every single thing I was going to say. So what I'll say is this is, I think if I'm the Rockets or if I'm James Piercy or if I'm anybody to do with the Rockets, whether it's a fan or organization member, it's for the longest time, Paolo was this touted number one prospect. Chet was obviously in that mix for a while. It was basically those two. At any point in the last 18 months, if you had told me, if a Rockets fan was like, oh, we're getting him at three, that's kind of cool, right? Like, I'd be really excited there, right? So you can't really be upset with that. Now, I wouldn't be here talking right now if I wasn't going to try to usher in some chaos. If they say they're like, you know what, a couple of workouts go wild, Paolo says some things, whatever. Say he does. Say they don't like him anymore. Just throwing out hypotheticals here. Which of the two guards, being Ivy and Sharp, are better fits next to like a Şengün and a Jalen Green, who I think are the two integral playmaking pieces on your team so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I like the way that you framed that, because from a strictly a fit perspective, I think it's probably Sharp. At the same time, I absolutely would not take Sharp with the third overall pick, to be honest with you. Like, nothing personal against the kid, you know, it's just there's too many question marks, man. I said this to my friend earlier, it's like, if Cam Reddish hadn't played a year of college, he might have been a top five pick, right? And that wouldn't have worked out, you know. Now, I mean, we used to draft players out of high school, and sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't, but I kind of have a bad feeling about Sharp, man. I don't like what I'm hearing about his workouts and stuff, and I don't really understand why he didn't play in Kentucky. Right? I'm not sure if that run and jump athleticism is going to translate into like a productive NBA career. It very well might, but I think Ivy looks like a much surer thing. Like, he's got a proven record of production, you know, at the college level. And I like what I see from Ivy. If we ended up drafting Ivy, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't necessarily be disappointed. Maybe I would certainly prefer one of the three bigs, but if you know, Raphael Stone sees something he doesn't like, I can trust that. But honestly, man, when it comes to Sharp, like, I would rather trade down and target Dyson Daniels or even Jeremy Sochan, or like do something a little bit crazy, you know, get the seventh overall pick with a future first or something like that, rather than just blow it on Shaedon Sharpe. I just think there's too much risk involved. And the third overall pick is like, it's just too significant of a piece to take that kind of a risk with, you know?
I threw that scenario at the wall because I had a feeling coming into this, because of everything we're hearing right now, is I had a feeling you would like Paolo and think they're going to do Paolo. I always ask the question of, who does someone want and who does he think the organization is going to pick? And obviously that answer was more than likely, I was 90% sure that was going to be the answer, was going to be the same pick there. So throwing stuff at the wall. Josh, the 17th overall pick via Brooklyn. This is a cool spot because we haven't really talked much further than the lottery a lot with the draft chat. We were going to do a little bit more when we did our mock here soon. Spoiler to those that are listening, our mock's coming out here in the next couple of weeks. But the 17th pick's kind of in that cool range because we had a lot of guys that we talked about in that right there in that 14-15. Like, how many guys, I feel like this class specifically, there's so many guys that are lottery picks, right? It feels like you could be like, that guy's going to go in the lottery. Well, 17's a cool spot because you're basically getting the pickings right after that, right? So right now, who is the best choice or best fit at 17? And then who do you want if it's not that guy?
Yeah, so I'll start with who I want because I'm really clear on that. I would really love to land Osmond Yang, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing. It's probably a little ambitious. Yeah, that was a bit of a tough one. It's probably an ambitious target at this point. I wouldn't rule out trading up. You know, the Rockets have a lot of prospects, so a lot of assets. If Stone sees something that he likes, maybe, you know, he might be willing to look at a trade-up scenario. I would love to draft Yang. I wrote a whole article on the Dream Shake about how much I loved him, and, like, I've tweeted about him a million times. I'm very interested. I think there's a lot of sleeper potential there. Like, I just don't think that there are guys 6'10", who can handle the ball that way, who have that kind of floor vision, that grow on trees, you know? I'll admit that he's a low-floor prospect. Like, he could end up being a nothing burger, but at the same time, I think there's definitely, like, a lot of star tools. If it can't be Jang, I really like Terry Eason. I think the Rockets really need, like, an aggressive defender, like a, you know, like a guy, like a dog, right? Right now, the team is really lacking in that. It's a lot of guys that, like, want to look for shots and stuff and don't really care about that end of the floor, you know? Other than Tate, very much, yeah. So Eason would probably just plug into Tate's role, but I think he has higher upside because he has more physical outliers, like the wingspan and you know, the open floor ball handling at his size. Like, he would just be like a supersized Tate, and I like that idea very much. I really like Tate, but at the same time, like, he can't be a 6'4" power forward, and you can't be a non-shooting small forward, so he's a little bit tricky, you know? He's a little bit tricky, man. So yeah, those are the two guys I like the best. In terms of who I suspect, I think that if it's not one of them, it'll probably be Marjan Beauchamp, who I'm kind of lukewarm on. Or E.G. Liddell, who I feel the same. Like, just like, that'd be fine, but I wouldn't be necessarily thrilled, you know?
Yeah, no, I like, look, we'll, him and I, Josh and I are going to talk about Jang a little bit more in our mock for sure, because he's the guy that I've got right now. If you ask me, I'm probably going to say one thing, and then tomorrow I'm probably going to say four spots lower. The next day I'll probably say six spots higher. So I really do like the Marjan Beauchamp, Josh. That's interesting there with the G League.
Yeah, I think he's one I don't really know where he's going to go in Beauchamp. I'm not the highest on him. I think that 17 would be a little high. I was kind of, and you're thinking on Tari Eason there, James. I'm also very much on the Usman Dieng train that I've been trying to get Trevor on for the past couple months. Because I think that if he's on the board at, especially if he's on the board at 15 for the Hornets, I think they should take him. But yeah, I was thinking, I mean, Tari Eason kind of seems like that perfect fit at 17. I would imagine he'll be there, and he kind of would slot into one of those big holes the Rockets have.
I think I like, first of all, I was muted. I absolutely lost it when you said the 6'4" power forward, Jae'Sean Tate, which is absolutely true. I've never heard it put like that, but it's, I think
he's Tari a smaller Eason's, Draymond Green.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, Tari Eason, though, I do like, because there's so many things that him and Tate are so similar, and I'm the one that does the draft comps. Like, that's my thing. I've been doing it for 5-6 years. I would call him, if I were making a draft comp, I would put a rich man's Tate. I think that's what Tari Eason is. He also just has these things where you're like, cool. In college, he averaged 16.5 points off the bench for a team that he shouldn't have been off the bench for at LSU. But yet, all I kept watching was, shout out to Stephen Gillespie. He had a bunch of what he called, Josh. It was like the shove 'em steals or something like that. It was like the steals where Tari would just, or mug 'em steals.
Where he would just take the ball.
I think let's just call him mug 'em steals. Sorry, Stephen, if I'm butchering that. Thank you for your service. But he just grabs the ball out of guy's hands and just takes off with him. And he averaged almost 2 steals in college and 1.5 blocks. So I think Tari would be a hilariously awesome fit, because he's, like you said, intangibly a little bit bigger than Tate.
If for what it's worth, also, you guys probably know this, but Eason, he's a Seattle area kid, and Banchero's a Seattle area guy, so is Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah.
So it's Raphael Stone, right? So yeah. Like, I actually think that it's relevant, because I think this front office is trying to, like, build goodwill, build a team full of friends, and improve sort of like the chemistry around the team. So I don't know, maybe it's something to think about as well, right?
Yeah, that was interesting. Anything else on the 3rd or the 17th picks, either of you guys, that we might be not thinking of right now? We're obviously going to talk about a little bit more of those prospects in that range here in just a second when we play the game, as well as the future at the end. But anything else that we might be missing in these two picks?
I like Kendall Brown. I feel like it's not likely to happen at 17. I think that he has outlier skills in that, Like, it's not that common to be such a strong run and jump athlete and be a plus passer, and I really like that about him. I think the thing with the kid is, like, if he develops, you know, a consistent three, he's going to be, like, a really strong wing in this league. And if he doesn't, he's going to struggle to play more than 10, 15 minutes a night. So, like, it's an upside swing. I don't think the Rockets are going to take it, but, like, I like him, though. Enough to mention him, you know?
Yeah, that's a good one. Josh, anybody else there in 17 that you might be excited about that we wouldn't have a chance to mention otherwise? Because assuming in this scenario, Agbaji doesn't fall to 17 because he's the perfect answer for every team.
No, I don't see that happening in many scenarios. Agbaji, I could see even being one of those draft nights somebody reaches at 10 or 9 that doesn't really know what they want to do. Yeah, a lot of the other guys around that area, unless it's like they really fall in love with like a Nikola Jovic and reach at 17, but I don't think that would be a great idea at that point.
One I'll throw out that's absolutely just skyrocketing right now is Dalen Terry, a guy that I talked to a couple of the No Ceilings guys about, where I was just dead set he was going back to Arizona and going to try to win a national title with the core that they're bringing back. And he's not. He officially announced this morning that he will be staying in the draft process, and a lot of places have him in that late, in that 23 range. But 23 really is 17, and 17 is really 23. Let's just be honest. Anybody that you might have, at that point, that's what people's big boards, people being the teams, that's what their big boards are so important. It's like, you know, I might have Terry above Jovic, but, you know, the Spurs might have Jovic at the first, you know, the first guy of the third tier. I'm just throwing that out, obviously, as a joke. But I think that's going to be really important in that range, so.
I'm sensing right, that you guys don't like Jovic. Sorry to interrupt. I feel the same way. I'm not high on him. Or did I misread that?
No, I it's changed. When we did our initial boards at the beginning of the NCAA tournament, I had him at, I believe, somewhere in that 12 to 14 range. Obviously, that early on, that's going to obviously change. I just – problem for me, and I'll be quick on this, is he can't defend. Like, I don't see any defensive potential whatsoever. And, like, if I'm drafting Danilo Gallinari, I'm not drafting him at 8th. I'm drafting him at 25th. That's what I'm getting. I'm not saying Danilo's not a good defender, but he never really has been a stout defender. So,
yeah, my issue with Jovic is just kind of trying to projecting where he goes. I see him very much as a late first-round talent who is a project, and there just aren't a lot of late first teams that are looking for a project. Other than, I guess, the Warriors, since that's just what they seem to be doing recently. So maybe other teams should look into that. But, yeah, I don't really know. I don't think he's even a middle-of-the-first-round guy. It's not necessarily someone who's going to make an immediate impact. I think he's going to take a couple years to adjust. And then he can provide... I think he'll be a good bench scorer or a good, like, fifth guy in your starting lineup. But like Trevor said, there's a lot of defensive questions. And especially, he doesn't have great size. Doesn't really wow me from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, I think you're correct on the first round grade. I think we can all agree on that. The problem for I think a lot of teams make that swing from 31 to 42-ish, 31 to 40-something. I think he's going to go in there only because of a lot of teams, like you mentioned. It's a lot of contenders in the back half of the first, and no contender's going to take him, I think. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands. It'll be a fun conversation to follow up on. Let's roll right into it. This is a rapid-fire game, so this segment won't take very long before we go into a little bit of the non-draft stuff that we're here to talk about with the storylines around some of the team next year. But with that being said, we'll go through. We've got four of these. This game's called This or That. It's actually a new one here. You're the first person not to play high or low because we did this to help you out. We've been playing high or low for weeks now, and I think we've named about every first-round prospect. And at this point, it's just a matter of do you have X, Y, and Z player this high or this low? So this game's very similar. It's called This or That. So all four of these scenarios are guys that are similar projections, similar positions and play styles, et cetera. So there are players that we value that are similar in some form or fashion. You're just going to rapid fire which one you think you like better. So it's still kind of high or low. And then you're just going to give a couple seconds here on why. So I'll go through the first two, Josh. You can go through the second two down there at the bottom. Prospects number one and two here are Jabari Smith and Paolo Banchero. We've already talked about it a little bit, but rapid fire. Right now, who do you like better?
Yeah, I like Paolo Banchero because I think he has the potential to be a offensive engine at the NBA level, which I struggle to see Bari.
He kept it short. That was awesome.
I'm going rapid, man.
We may throw another one in because that one was kind of obvious. We had written that one before I'd written the first segment up. So the second one's two guys we haven't talked about yet, but Josh and I are both pretty high on. Jalen Duren and Mark Williams.
Yeah, I strongly prefer Jalen Duren personally. I suspect that Williams strikes me as a career backup big man, to be completely honest. I know you guys are both high on him, so I don't mean to, you know, disparage, but like to me, he looks like a backup. He looks like a drop coverage big, and I think those players are kind of going out of fashion. Duren, I think, has a little bit of potential to be switchable and to be a more versatile defender. And I think if he can do that, he can be a high-end starter for his career. I like Duren comfortably.
Whew. I mean, Trevor's definitely way higher on Mark Williams than I am. He's trying to convince me that it's the dream scenario for the Charlotte Hornets. But
I like Duren.
I like Duren better, too. Yeah. I just don't think he's going to be there at 13.
Okay. Let me, before we move on, let me clarify something. Because, yes, I am high on Williams.
He's your favorite player in the draft.
My favorite player in this draft, period.
Yeah.
However, I am not naive to understand that Jalen Duren's ceiling is something I have no number on. Like, I can't put a face value to his ceiling. I can put a face value to his floor. That's the issue for me, is I can look at his floor and go, wow, that's really bad. Now, Mark Williams, I think there is a better gap there where I know what I'm getting. If he's best case scenario, I'm getting a Robert Williams type player who was a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year with Mark Williams. If I'm getting a floor, I'm getting a, you know, seventh, eighth man, backup big, kind of like your maybe Richaun Holmes. He's not really like that. I guess he's more of a sixth man for the Kings, but like, I don't know, who's Clint Capella's backup in Houston? Something like that, right? Like in the past, so that kind of thing. A guy that's going to come in and play 15, 20 minutes, maybe JaVale McGee. There we go. There's one off the top of my head. JaVale McGee, good defender, championship-level player who when he's healthy. So,
and Mark Williams. You know what, man? That's a good argument, and I tend to veer upside. Like, in my evaluations, I would rather swing on ceiling. And that's just my personal, like, kind of modus operandi. So, you make a good case, for sure.
By the way, for if you haven't read our draft boards, that is not my floor ceiling for him. My floor ceiling is Robert Williams, ceiling is Kevin Garnett. So taper that a little bit as you must. But, you know, that can change any day now. All right, Josh, number three and number four.
Number three, let's go AJ Griffin and Benedict Mathurin.
That's a really good one, man. I think I'm going to go AJ Griffin. I think that Mathurin... his defensive intensity tends to wane a little bit sometimes, you know.
Okay.
Like he's a good, solid, fundamental defender, but I wonder if he gets a little bit listless sometimes. I like both, and I don't love either. I'm a little worried about Griffin's, like, depleted athleticism, you know, and whether he's ever going to really be able to regain that. But at the very least, like, he's got a cannon of a three-point shot, right? And so he's going to at least bring a lot to the table that way. I'll take Griffin narrowly, but that's a close one for me.
Josh, I haven't told you this yet since I've been evaluating my big board here for our final big boards coming up. But Mathurin has, if you had to ask me who's the guy that's really shot up for me, and you had him in yours and did not have him in mine originally, he has shot up for mine and he is very, very high now. So I did a very long, very regrettable deep dive on Benedict Mathurin, and shout out to Steven again. Steven's going to appreciate that when he hears this. I am all in on Benedict Mathurin anywhere outside of the top like five or six. Like he's there. Any team should be absolutely thrilled to get him. Similar concerns with AJ Griffin, as you mentioned, but you just can't pass up that kind of shooting and defensive potential. It's kind of hard. I know you like AJ Griffin.
I have concerns with AJ Griffin. A lot of it just came from watching a lot of his games with Duke, especially late in the season. He has a huge tendency to disappear on the court. Especially when he's matched up with a good defender, he disappeared quite a bit. He strikes me with a lot of the same Cam Reddish fears of a guy who is a great 3-and-D player, who's got this length that everybody is really excited about, and then he gets out there and you just kind of forget he's there. But
I think
he's got all the tools. It's just a question of, from a mental standpoint, does he apply it all the time and is it going to translate?
I should have to point out, we're 20 minutes into a Rockets podcast, and we've mentioned Cam Reddish twice. The draft time of the year is just very weird. Go ahead,
yeah.
James.
It's a weird time of year, yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah, I agree with that. AJ, like, there's so many questions, and that makes me wary as well. Again, I'm swinging on upside in relation to Mathurin, I guess. But, like, the thing with AJ is, to what extent did he disappear? Because I completely agree with you. But to what extent was that due to Banchero, right? And like he just exists in this kind of Paolo Banchero centered offense. Now in the same breath, he's gonna land on teams where in all likelihood there's like a better offensive player than him, right? So he's gonna have to learn to assert himself and be aggressive throughout his NBA career. And then also there's such a discord between like his high school tape and what we actually saw at Duke. And I don't know, I have a friend, shout out Cooper Klein, who really strongly believes that the athleticism can turn itself around and like that he's going to be a really high end NBA player. But like, I don't know, I'm a little bit dubious, man. Like what if the injury just kind of altered his athletic abilities? In that case, yeah, he's like a 3-and-D at best, you know?
And I would even taper that and say he's a 3 at best, and that's the issue I'm having.
Right,
if,
yeah,
if the athleticism doesn't come around, and if it, let's, okay, so like say you are high on the athleticism coming through in fruition, that's great. That's where you would have him in that 7-9 range. My problem is what is his value if he's just a 3-point shooter? Like, I don't even have a comp for a just 3-point shooting AJ Griffin. Like, I just don't even know
Cameron Johnson.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. But Cameron Johnson.
And that's a best case scenario.
And yeah, exactly. And AJ Griffin's got a lot more time and a lot more youth there. So maybe there's, I don't know. I'm just so stuck on him. I'm going to end up having him in that same range everyone else does, because I'm not going to be the guy to have him at 14 and have to be able to swallow that pill publicly. But I almost want to now, because I'm like just so confused, and I don't know. Yeah, he's so tough, man. I'm glad you slightly went there. You went with Benedict, is that correct there? Slightly,
or did no? You I went with Griffin, but like as we flesh it out, I already like I'm really narrow on those two. Yeah,
it happens all the time. You sit here and you talk about it, and you go, "Did I just talk myself out of that guy?"
I think exactly. I did. Yeah.
All right, Josh, who's number who's number 7 and 8?
Let's go with the second and third point guards on most people's big boards, Ty Washington and Kennedy Chandler.
Yeah, I have concerns about both. I'm not super high on either, you know? I think that Chandler strikes me as a really high IQ player, but, like, the size issues are a little bit, you know, like, concerning. On the other hand, Ty, he doesn't look to me like he's really going to be able to get to the bucket consistently and reliably at the pro level, you know. I think he's like, it's gonna be hard for him. He's not really a plus athlete. I'm not really sure if he's gonna be able to penetrate and get his driving dish going. I think I'm gonna take Ty just because he's like the consensus, and I'm not really super high on either, and I don't see like anything more than a backup role for either. So I'm just gonna defer to the consensus on that one and take Ty.
That's totally fine. Josh, the reason I like this one is because I think it's a really good transition into one of the first three questions we have here for the final segment of going through the future. Ty is somebody I value at 17 for the Rockets. I think he's a really good choice. I've been higher on him than most for a while. I think they don't necessarily need a point guard, but I think he's a good option. I think he's more valuable to a team like the Rockets than he would be to a team like the Hornets, who would have a backup point guard. I'm just using the Hornets as Josh's example. But I think he's more valuable as a guy that could play on a young team and learn and develop and become a better player versus getting stuck behind, you know, a point guard somewhere else. So the reason I like that analogy, and I'm glad you went with Ty, is because I'll ask you the KPJ question first. We're going to move on to segment three here, where we talk about the Rockets' future. Right now, they're playing him as a point guard. I think that's very obvious to people who watch the Rockets, if they do, on League Pass. Right now, are you in or out on the future for KPJ? Answer that however you feel like you want to, because I don't really know how to ask it. So,
yeah, I'm in between for sure. Like I'm to be determined. My feelings on KPJ fluctuated wildly all through the year, man. Right, like at times I was like, this kid is not a point guard. He's never going to be a point guard. You know, I find that a very common argument in favor of him being a point guard is, well, this is his first year trying it. And I'm like, that's fair. But I mean, some of these guys were identified as point guards at the age of like 13, 14. Like maybe he hasn't been given an opportunity to be a point guard before because he's not a point guard, you know, like it's possible, right? I understand that the league is changing and score first point guards are more and more common, but he doesn't really have great processing speed. Like he just does not read a defense and make a good decision quickly on a routine basis. With all that being said, this is part of why I like Paolo Banchero, because if Banchero is the initiator and the offensive engine and we really use him as like a point forward, now all KPJ really has to do is like spot up and attack closeouts and you know, like already scrambled defenses. And that's a role that I think he could thrive in. Like he's talented. I like him as a player, right? I'm not sure that he's like a future star like a lot of Rockets fans would tell you, you know? I think the indicators suggest that he's probably not, but at this stage in his career, you know, he hasn't really produced on that level. But I do think he can be like a solid starter, and with the right group around him, I think you could slot him in at the one in your starting lineup, which I see as like critically different than him like being your point guard. You know, I don't see a world where he brings the ball to the floor and sets up the offense on a routine basis. I just don't think it's his game. You know, I don't think he's quite got the basketball IQ. He's kind of just a scorer more than anything. I know it's kind of like a flimsy answer, but that's where I'm at with them at the moment. You know,
admittedly, it was kind of a flimsy question, Josh. We've talked about KPJ probably more than, I mean, because we talked about him when he had an incident. I don't remember what the incident was now, but then we also talked about him when he had 50. Yeah. So we've talked about it more than I think most podcasts probably would, who cover basketball as a whole. I mean, you could go look at our titles over the last year and a half. He's in there twice, which is more than most players. It's just kind of funny. So that's the reason I threw the KPJ question at the last minute about an hour and a half ago. I was like, I really got to know his thoughts on KPJ because I have mine and I'm curious. It's okay. Flimsy question, flimsy answer. Josh, I'm just curious if you agree or disagree with anything he said.
No, and I mean, honestly, I gotta admit, I'm probably underwatched as to Kevin Porter Jr. as a point guard. I definitely would say I side with James and seeing him more as a shooting guard and a pure scorer kind of player. I will say for a team like where the Rockets are at, it's not a bad idea to experiment with who runs the point. I don't know if it's a long, because I think a lot of people might have thought at first when Jalen Green came in, okay, Jalen Green's gonna be the point guard. I think he's kind of a combo guard who might thrive more in an off-ball position. And they may look for more of a pure passer at some point. But I think he's right. I mean, Paolo Banchero, if he comes into that team, might be the best passer on the team and would be able to facilitate that offense quite well. Well, it kind of leads into one of the big questions I had for you is, who do you see as the core of this Rockets team that they're building? Who are the core pieces of who's going to stay for what's being built and who's not a core piece that's going to be shipped out or is going to be let walk when their contract ends?
Yeah, so I would break it into, like, tiers, I guess, right? Tier one is Jalen Green. That, to me, like, he stands alone, and that, to me, Green is the only player I see on the team that I'm like, this guy is quite evidently a cornerstone and going to be part of the team, right? Next tier down is potential cornerstones, which is KPJ and Alperen Şengün. So to touch on Şengün a little bit, like, I love Şengün. I love watching him play, man. The kid is, like, he may be a basketball genius, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got eyes all 360 around his head. But I hate to say it, I get burned on it for Twitter. You know, I'm like a pariah. But he's got slow feet, man.
Oh, he's slow, yeah.
Yeah, slow feet. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to be a viable defender. Like, so with that said, I don't know if he can be a starting center in the NBA, to be honest. Like, it's crazy to say when someone's so talented.
So is the two-time MVP Nikola Jokic.
He's long. But he's big and long, right?
Yeah, I get it. Okay, that's fair.
I have this debate every day, so like I'm ready. I'm ready with answers. But yeah,
with yourself or with people? With both, you both, right? Both. Got it.
Yeah, no, I would love to believe in him more, but I'm a little like, to me, look at not just these playoffs, but the last two playoffs is. And guys like that don't tend to survive. Like, Nikola is also an exception to the rule a little bit, right? Like, I mean, this guy's, like, maybe the best. I think, to me, he's probably the third best player in the league, you know? And, like, that's pretty tall cotton for Alperen Şengün to reach.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. To me, I still see a really high ceiling and a really low floor for Şengün. Or, like, a reasonably low floor. I also don't think he fits well with Paolo Banchero. Because there's no way you can have those two guys, right? Yeah, as your front court defense. And I would not hesitate to draft Banchero as a consequence of Şengün being on the team. So, you know, the jury's still out. Then, otherwise, I see a bunch of guys that, like, I can kind of take or leave. That may be part of the future and may not. That'd be Jayson Tate, KJ Martin. You know, I'm not even going to touch on the veterans because, like, who cares, right? Josh Christopher, same tier. He may or may not be a part of the future. At this point, it's just like, who knows? I like him. And then the last tier that I would identify is complete unknowns, and that is Deshaun Nix and Yuzman Garuba. Mm-hmm. I have a really good feeling about Garuba. I know his rookie year was weird, but like the last like 5-6 games, when he actually got a role, he looked wicked, man. He's a really potentially great defensive player, in my opinion, and he's high IQ and high effort. Knicks, I'm not sure if he's an NBA athlete, but he is a high IQ player, so time will tell.
But I like hearing the Garuba shout. That's one we haven't talked about since Trevor and I did our last preview, where we like, or at least I liked Garuba heading into the draft, but he was a weird prospect. Because usually you get a lot of guys coming out of college in America for the NBA who are all offense and can't play defense. And Garuba was coming out of the EuroLeague with no offense and incredible defense. And it was very a very different kind of player. I think it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I mean, if there's a place for those all offense and no defense guys in the NBA, I got to think that there's a spot for a guy who's an incredible defender who may not be able to do much on the offensive end.
Totally.
I love that we broke these tiers down. I actually wrote them down because I want to look at them later when we're not recording. Mm-hmm. And I just want to, like, because this is the time of year where if I'm not watching the finals, I'm doing these crazy mad scientist scenarios with each team. And so when we have our previews in a couple of months, it'll be a lot more in-depth and a lot better. I want to talk about Şengün for a second because I really do like everything you said. I don't necessarily disagree. And Josh, like, full-blown talked me into Şengün. He was like, he's going to be this guy in this great range.
He was my favorite prospect last year because I just thought he was a top 10 guy that was going 10 to 15, it didn't make any sense.
Right. And it all added up to where he went to, I think he went to a perfect scenario. Mm-hmm. Now, talk about perfect scenarios. The reason I brought this up, because I'm curious on you guys' thoughts, Josh, I don't think I've ever shared this with you, but every now and then I, you know, lay down at night and I have these dreams of different prospects and I wake up and I go, oh my God, that was a great idea. The one that perplexed me the most pre-lottery, because obviously post-lottery, this is a lot's going to have to happen to see this. I think Chet Holmgren and Alperen Şengün next to each other would be the best fit in this draft, and I think it's a mile before the next fit. Like, it's just, I can't unsee it, and pre-lottery, I'm not going to lie, I never shared it publicly because I didn't want Rockets fans to riot if they got the third pick, and lo and behold, that's what happened. So I'm curious you guys' thoughts, really. We don't have to spend forever on that because we still got one more topic, but Şengün, Chet Holmgren, I think it's a marriage that should have happened if they had not gotten at three.
Josh, you want to take that first?
I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of Chet Holmgren fits just about everywhere.
I know.
He's the perfect piece that's why I said at the beginning, like, I'm sure everybody wants him. I was holding on to the fact the Hornets had a 1% chance in the lottery to jump up to try to go make that move, so.
It's Şengün's passing, and you mentioned that I've never heard anybody word it like this, but it's so true. It's the second or third offensive option, but like your best defensive option for Chet, and that next to Şengün, and then you have a guy like, oh, by the way, Jalen Green's still going to be the leading scorer on this team, and it was this perfect marriage, and I'm not even a Rockets fan, and I had these really happy, exciting thoughts about this, and the NBA fan in me just wanted that so bad, and it's a long shot to say the least.
Yeah, it's definitely a long shot to say the least. I agree with you. I actually would have some concerns about the pairing. Not to shatter your dreams.
No, well, good. I want to hear it.
Shatter them.
Defensively, I think it's really interesting. I don't necessarily think Holmgren is going to be all that switchable. I think he's going to be one of the best drop coverage bigs in the league. And I know I said that those players are going out of fashion, but, you know, Holmgren's range of offensive tools will make him an exception if he's, like, you know, an elite drop coverage guy as well. But with that said, he's got so much length that even if his lateral mobility doesn't improve, he might be able to recover on the perimeter. And so he might still be a really good complement to Şengün that way. I think what I would say looking at that pairing is that, like, I would see an extremely high ceiling for them, and I would also see maybe a fairly low floor for them. But, like, I understand your enthusiasm because if it works, it could be utter madness for sure, right? So
I love the irony, Josh. This is just summarizing how weird, and I've said this for this draft for months, but this draft is weird. Let's just get it out of the way. Like, there's so many guys in the lottery after the top four that you're like, I'll take them anywhere after four. And you mentioned the drop coverage thing, where it's like, yes, that's being phased out of the league for the most part, it seems like, yet every single big that's a basically first, let's just say Walker Kessler, you know, Duren, Williams, and Holmgren are all the bigs here. All of them are really good at it. And that's the part that's so perplexing. Is if those are your four best bigs in a draft that could all potentially go in the first round, and they're all drop coverage bigs, it's like we're getting this resurgence in wave. It's so weird. We don't have to go down the drop coverage big, you know, rabbit hole, but that is a really good point. Josh, last thing. Let's go ahead and get the bad scientist brain out of here with the trade machine. Let's go ahead and do this.
Well,
now.
I mean, James said that he's a cooking up fake trades expert, right, to see how things would go. So, Christian Wood, man, what is the scenario there? Because I can't imagine he's suiting up in a Rockets jersey again at the start of next season.
I pray every day, man. Trust me. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Like, in by now, almost 30 years of loving this team, I think this might be my least favorite player in the history of the team.
Wow.
I just find that the defensive effort is so lackluster, and he's constantly back on the other end complaining about calls and stuff, like, all the time, and bad complaints. Like, you did not get fouled. Get back on defense. Anyway, I think that my favorite destination for him, like, if I was a fan of him, you know, would probably be the Mavericks, I think, because, like, you know, it's funny, he was brought on to compliment Harden and Westbrook, right? Like, really, that's what we acquired him for. And I think that, you know, in fairness to him, he is a big that can roll and pop with equal effectiveness, and that makes, when you have, like, a dynamic playmaker like Luka, that makes for a really effective offense. And so I think that there could still be a place for him in the league, but just hopefully not with us anymore. But I think Dallas is probably the best bet. I think Miami could be maybe an interesting place for him, because with Bam Adebayo, he can shift back to the four, and some of his defensive deficiencies are masked because Bam is, like, such a versatile defender, you know, so he can cover some ground for him. It's funny, so you're a Hornets fan, are you?
I am.
First of all, let me just quickly digress and tell you that the Hornets, like, were objectively my favorite team to watch all year. Something I love. Like, yeah. I love LaMelo Ball, man. I love
me
LaMelo.
Too.
Yeah, he's really one of my favorite players. He's so fun. And they're a team that I find Wood is frequently linked to. For your sake, I hope it doesn't happen, man.
I'm not. Yeah. We had him before he became this
star
scorer, and I didn't like him then, and I don't like the idea of him coming back now.
No, thank because you for the reminder. Holy cow, thank you for the reminder.
You didn't remember that?
There.
I remember that.
I do now. I've
suffered through all of the terrible Hornet seasons. It's getting a little better. We had a winning record this year. We're moving places.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, right. You need to improve your defense, right? So Wood,
and that's not him.
It's not the answer. Yeah, you need, like, Miles Turner or one of the guys in the draft.
Big, long shot blocker.
Yeah, exactly.
The dream that I'm willing to, like, I'm hoping Donovan Mitchell wins over the Utah front office and they decide they want to ship Rudy Gobert out.
Yeah.
And then send Gordon Hayward back to Utah, get his salary off, and matches it with by bringing Gobert in. Gobert's a perfect fit, but
feasible, man. You'd probably have to give up Kai Jones or Boak Knight or something like that.
It'd probably be like, the hope was like Washington and
or Washington.
Maybe a couple picks, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been saying it for weeks now. I think the best case scenario if the Hornets don't make a move with Turner is I love, if like you mentioned Mark Williams earlier, and then the Ochai Agbaji part of it where it's like 13-15. If they just have to get away with getting one of those two guys, and I'm not saying Jalen Duren's going to fall to 13, but I'm not saying it. Not,
he
it
could.
Not, he could.
So
he
that's the scary part of it, yeah.
That's the part I'm starting to talk myself into that as we're starting to prepare for our mock. You mentioned the Mavericks piece because obviously that's an in-state and in-division rival. I know that's a little less uncommon with the NBA. It still happens. Trades happen no matter what with divisions. But I know without having it up in front of you, you may not have a potential trade, but I want to hear if you have one. If not, I have one that I put together and I want to see what you think.
Yeah, no, I have ideas. I think something like possibly, I hate to say it, but Davis Bertans, just to make the contracts match, and Josh Green and a first round pick would be something that I think would be good. I really like the idea of Josh Green. We need defensive wings. He can't really shoot, so they shouldn't be coveting him too much at this stage in his development, but if he can develop a three, he'll be good for us moving forward. And I think it's a pretty fair trade. Maybe there's protections on the pick. Maybe it's a swap. I'm not sure what year. But, yeah, something like that. Well, what do you have put together?
That one works. I saw that one as well. Here's the one I just put together on the fly on NBA Swap app. It's Christian Wood would leave, and coming in would be Dwight Powell, Trey Burke, and a protected 2023 first-rounder. The reason I did that is because I don't think Christian Wood is worth – and I think, look, Davis Bertans contract aside, he's a great player for the Mavericks. I don't see them moving on from him unless they really don't like the contract clock term. That's my issue. They could not play. Dwight Powell was unplayable in this playoffs. Like, any time, him and Kleber both really were, but Kleber I could at least get away with a couple of times. And then Trey Burke, they don't value Trey Burke long term. He's only got 2 years left, $3.1 million. It's the Powell contract for 2 years. You're not shedding much, but you're shedding enough. And then that 2023 first-round pick, there's going to be a lottery protection on it, I have to think. I doubt that Christian Wood is an unprotected first kind of guy in this market. That's the one I had for you, just as like a throw that at the wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah, I think it's solid too because on the Rocket stand, like, the 23 pick is unlikely to, or rather it is likely to convey, because obviously the Mavericks are going to be, like, gunning for the championship, let alone, you know, like, that's what they're hoping
you
to
hope,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, in all likelihood, I might push back, you know, if we're both playing GM here and say, like, it's got to be top five protection or something. Like, the Mavericks can protect against disaster, but I don't know. For the Rockets, I want a little something like, hey, maybe it's the 14th pick, we get it, you know? But, yeah, either way, I think it's a pretty fair trade.
No, and look, the protection's all over the board. It's at that point, that's the kind of stuff you work out when the deal's almost done.
That's right.
For me, it was more of a focus on the two other pieces because it's just... I'm not sure. I'm sure if this is me, I'm making this call and I'm going, this is my first offer. And if they take it, great. I'm thrilled. They're taking Dwight Powell and Trey Burke and moving on. The problem with the Mavericks is they like shooting. And I'm not sure Christian Wood's the answer there, but they do want a player that can be better than what they currently have. And Josh Snyder
can shoot.
Critiques of.
Yeah. He definitely likes to.
Yeah, that's fair. Critiques of their roster is something him and I have been high on for the last couple of years. And it's just. He wouldn't be a perfect fix. I think they've got other things in mind. I think the Mavericks are going to have a very weird offseason. I mean,
like, who is a perfect fit for the Mavericks at this point? We thought they, like, needed a big desperately, yet they went to the Western Conference Finals this year.
Without one.
No, maybe they don't even need one. Like, they don't do it without a big.
Can I interject with one more point? I know we're running a little bit long, but...
No, you're good, good.
Yeah, it's funny how fan bases perceive things, because I'm talking to both of you guys, and I'm guessing neither of you are Mavericks fans?
Nope.
No, right. And I know
I like Luka Doncic a lot.
Oh, of course, right?
Yeah. As we all do.
Yeah. You're not Rockets fans either, but let me tell you something. I proposed on Twitter a trade of Christian Wood and Jae'Sean Tate to the Hornets. Christian Wood, Jae'Sean Tate, and the 17th overall pick for, I guess it was Mason Plumlee, PJ Washington, and the 13th overall pick. And Rockets fans... largely eviscerated me. Like, really? That's ridiculous. We're getting the worst value. What are you talking about? And I was like, you guys are tripping. Like, PJ Washington and we move up in the draft. That's a fantastic haul for Wood. So, you know, it's funny how fan bases overvalue their own guys and stuff. Because now here you are telling me Dwight Powell and a protected first, you know? And, like, don't bring that to Rockets Twitter, man. That's my advice.
I'm not. They're going to hear this eventually.
Yeah, I honestly, like, in the Hornets side and... I don't know. I don't agree with Hornet Twitter ever.
Literally ever.
No, never. Especially when they hated that we drafted Miles Bridges instead of Michael Porter Jr. And who's playing now? Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would go that route. I don't care about Plumlee. I mean, can send him out. But I'm probably higher on PJ Washington. I wouldn't want to send him away from Charlotte if it was for anything other than a package for, like, a really big... star or someone who's actually going to fix the defensive issues.
If I'm a Hornets fan, and I'm not, but the only way I'm happy in that scenario is if he's for a Ayton, a Turner, or a Gobert.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. Yeah. Part of it is that I just am a big fan of PJ Washington. I'd rather not see him play for someone else. Like, I want to see him play for the Hornets just because I like him as a player and as a member of the franchise, but...
Yeah, I just... Hornets Twitter, they're the same people that wanted James Borrego fired, and then that's what they got. So, it's... Take it with a grain of salt on any fan base on Twitter. I think Rockets Twitter is pretty tolerable sometimes, though. I really don't think we get much pushback. I love that there's a bunch of Rockets like fan player pages. You've got like every Rockets player has a favorite, like a fan favorite page. Like it's kind of cool, actually. So
I love our Rockets Twitter people, you know, but just we tend to overvalue our own guys. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. With that being said, obviously, on the way out, every guest gets a minute to go over any place they can find you. Obviously, it'll also be linked in the bottom of this on Saturday. I don't even know what Saturday's date is. We're recording this on Wednesday, June 1st. But wherever people can find you, anything else you want to say or want to mention on the way out?
Yeah, no, man. I mean, go look for me on the Dream Shake. Follow me on Twitter, JamesPiercy11. Go read my NBA analysis articles. HTX Chop Shop above the break. It's too many things to really say in one sentence right now, you know, but that's what I'm up to. And thanks again, guys, for having me. I had a lot of fun as well.
All right, awesome. Well, this has been Draft Chat. I'm Trevor.
I'm Josh. And he's James. And we will see you soon.